From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Kristen Johnston Largen.
This is Kristen Johnston Largen, interim dean and associate professor of systematic theology here at Gettysburg Seminary with Seminary Explores. And today our guest is Lamar Bailey, a middler who just finished his second year getting ready to go on internship. Lamar, welcome.
Thank you for having me here today.
What we're going to talk about with Lamar has a very interesting background that I think offers some interesting ways to think about the role of the church in society and the larger world in particular. And so start out, Lamar, by just sharing a little bit about kind of what you did before you came to seminary.
Sure. My background was in policy, specifically state and local policy. I started out at the National Conference of State Legislatures, focusing on education policy, and mostly policy that focused on folks who were disadvantaged or kids of color. And then I moved into the federal policy here, or down in Washington, D.C., a couple years ago, which turned out to be more of a faith-based policy, working with other Christian organizations, mostly ecumenical organizations, around issues of justice and peace.
Yeah.
That was with the American Friends Service Committee. So, and I've been in policy, I guess, for about 8 years or so. It was in total.
Well, I think for me, what I think is so interesting, I mean, and I'm sure you've had this experience too, I think there are a lot of people in the churches who really don't like the thought of the church sort of even dipping its toe in anything that seems overtly political, because I think people have this assumption that, well, to do that means that you're either choosing sides, right? Well, that you're promoting a Democratic agenda or a Republican agenda. And how is the church supposed to navigate those waters without, you know, getting sucked into kind of one political party or another? Have you had that experience, or how did you kind of think about that?
That is definitely true. The church is made up of, obviously, you know, a lot of individuals who have a lot of different individual ideas and belief systems, and they all bring those beliefs with them. So that makes it kind of complicated that, you know, there could be folks on one side of the issue and folks on the other side of the issue. I think what we would try to work into people's minds is the idea is that no matter what side of the issue you're on, that policies are made, and because of those policies, people suffer. And the idea is that no matter what side you're on, as Christians, we feel that we need to relieve that suffering. So that's kind of one way we've talked about it with folks, because folks don't often see the results of policy. We hear a lot of talk and discussion around certain policies like housing. It might sound like a benign policy, but that policy would have a definite impact on the lives of definitely families or folks who are mentally ill. And often that part is not really talked about in the conversation. So when you lift up the fact that a certain policy is negatively affecting people, then folks in the church are have a better understanding and more willing and able to get involved.
Well, let's take a specific example and kind of talk about that a little bit. I mean, you mentioned housing. Is there a particular piece of legislation that you could point to where you could say, okay, here was something that was not a Democratic or Republican issue, but we were trying to lobby on behalf of or for this kind of position?
Sure. Think about that for a second.
Oh, sure. Well, while you're thinking, yeah, I mean, yeah. I think your point is, mm-hmm. is really pertinent, and it reminds me of that kind of trite story about the whole babies in the stream thing, mm-hmm. right? Where you sort mm-hmm. of, the babies in the water, the church says, oh, you know, we need to pull them out and get them out, which is great. But at what point are you going to ask, why are the babies in the water, and go upstream and see what's going on that's right. actually causing that to happen? Right. And for me, it feels like often when the churches think about their public role or their kind of social ministry role, it's sort of to serve a particular concrete need right here in the community, which is great. But then at what point do you step back and say, yes, but we need to ask, okay, we have a soup kitchen because they're homeless people. Yeah. Why are there homeless people? Right?
Sure.
Was that enough time? That was my stall for you.
That works.
Okay.
There's not often a specific policy in mind that's going through,
mm-hmm.
but often the policies that would come up as far as how much money to spend on cutting back federally supported housing programs
okay.
like Section 8 would be one.
And what is
Section 8 is a housing program that provides assistance to low income people who are homeless or experiencing homelessness. And it would help help folks pay monthly rent.
Okay, I see.
So every once in a while there would be, talk on the federal level of cutting that program back or changing how that program is administered. And that would just a little bit of a percent cut or change in the policy would have massive effects for people who are homeless or currently homeless. There was one policy that they wanted to change the amount of rent, the minimum amount of rent that folks had to pay in order to stay in the program. And it was a very minimal amount, but the effect was huge. It would have meant that many of the families that we worked with on the local level, their housing would have been in jeopardy.
Wow.
And most likely would have ended up on the streets.
Wow.
And the folks who were experiencing mental health issues who were homeless would have definitely probably ended up on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just a slight little benign change in policy has a huge difference, and a lot of people are not going to know that unless it's brought up,
right.
Especially folks in the faith community. So that was kind of how we saw our job, was bringing up things that were kind of hidden,
yeah,
in a way that if it wasn't explained, people would think it's just. Oh, that sounds fine with me. Sounds like a fine policy.
So was that a lot of your work, that you would go in and actually talk to church groups or give presentations in congregations? Or how would you get the word out? I mean, how would you kind of do that?
We would do a little bit of both. The most effective way that we found to work, and I think a lot of policy folks would agree with this, is to bring people who are in the congregation, who are working maybe with home. Just while we're on the topic of homelessness,
sure.
That are working with folks who are homeless, or maybe they have experienced homelessness themselves. The idea was to bring those folks into the senator's office or to the staff person's office or the House of Representatives' office and have them give their testimony.
Okay.
That is way more impactful than me, a policy professional or a talking head, someone that they see coming down, coming into the halls all day, while they trust me. They still, the story of the person who has or is experiencing homelessness is by far more effective in changing the minds or getting policymakers to reconsider their decisions. So on the education part, we would definitely go out to congregations, or we would look for bigger events that might have been held by an interfaith group or a ecumenical faith organization in that area. It was kind of the best way that we would find to get people engaged in these issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And just finding local advocates in a congregation is extremely helpful.
Yeah, right.
Working with them because they have a stronger connection, obviously, with the people in the congregation.
Sure.
To educate their congregation, so...
Does this happen at every state level? I mean, you were doing that first, and then you went to the national level, but are there... I mean, I know the Lutheran Advocacy has, offices maybe in not every state, right?
Yeah.
But Colorado was one,
right.
Where
right.
I'm from, and of
right.
course Pennsylvania is one.
Yeah. I would say on the whole, as faith-based organizations, there's not a lot of state policy offices anymore.
Okay.
There were probably more in the past, but because of funding issues, and because of what you said in the beginning, a lot of folks are just kind of wary of politics,
right.
the country in general, at the time, and I would still say is kind of still wary of politics and policy. So that has caused some folks to kind of withdraw at the denominational level or the higher church level.
Yeah.
That has been a consequence. But unfortunately, that's very unfortunate, because I think personally state policy and local policy is probably the place that you can have the biggest impact and probably some of the fastest change is more possible on a state and local level. But without the funding there, or without the support of the churches, by not supporting policy offices, we kind of kind of lose that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, you know, I wonder if part of what we need is a synonym for the word political as an adjective. Because I think, I mean, personally, if you asked me, was Jesus political? Is the church supposed to be political? I would say yes, absolutely.
Right.
And in some ways, I think it's one of the ways we could talk about this is to recapture reinvigorate the adjective prophetic.
Right.
Because I think for me, I don't know how you would think about that, but when I think about what I would consider Jesus' political activities, they were prophetic, right?
Right.
I mean, and it is this kind of advocacy for justice for the marginalized and the oppressed. And I think for the church to ask itself, what would it mean for us to be prophetic in the context in which we find ourselves? Yeah, I think it's getting involved in this kind of the political arena.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great point. I just happened to be reading one of Martin Luther King's sermons a couple weeks ago, and that's the word that came to mind when I was reading it. And it was, I can't remember the specifics of the sermon right now, but it was, you know, a straightforward prophetic sermon talking about race in America and talking about how that came to be through the political and policy process. But the overall tone of the sermon was definitely prophetic.
Yeah.
And I think that's I think that's something that would be great for us, you know, to reclaim.
Right.
And also to give folks in the pews or you know, in the church a language that helps them to be prophetic, to help them talk about the issues that are in society in a frame that is more theologically and spiritually grounded, instead of terms that are often political or politicized.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I think also providing the space where people can, I don't know if this will make sense, but providing the space where people can say a prophetic word about something.
Yeah.
And I think, as we talked about earlier, folks' hesitancy to talk about these issues makes it harder to have that space.
Right.
And looking back at that Martin Luther King sermon and saying, wow, I don't know if we could say half the things he said in the sermon in the pulpits today.
Yeah. Well, he was assassinated after all,
exactly.
Right? I mean, you know, our MLK speaker in the spring said, yeah, let's not forget, we all love King now.
Right.
But he was assassinated for what he was saying. And so there's a cost to this for the church. And I think we have to face that also.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, and I think another, and this sort of then will lead me to the next question in thinking about for you then how all of this, the path kind of led you to an understanding of vocation in public ministry and as you're thinking about even your internship that's starting in the fall. But I think the language of vocation, of what it means to be a Christian, that's another thing that I think the church really needs to to expand more robustly, right? I mean, we still have this idea that being Christian, the very specific things that I do on a Sunday morning, and then I have the whole rest of my secular life. With the exception of sexual morality, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard me complain about this before, that I think there's this idea that if I'm going to church, I'm reading the Bible, and I'm keeping these very stringent sexual morals, then somehow I'm being a good Christian.
Right?
And I'm not saying, obviously, I'm not saying those things are unimportant, but I think the sense of what it means to be a Christian should affect our whole understanding of who we are in the world, right? So that all aspects, and that's the embodied aspects that include racism, right? And certainly sexism. And and how do we sort of bring a sense of, yeah, what does it mean for me as a Christian to be voting a certain way or to be giving my money to this charity or that charity or my time to this organization or that organization? And how do I, because I think we also haven't given people the tools to think about how to integrate those things. I mean, they may, again, think about, well, I go to church. That's what it means that I'm a Christian. Oh, and I also volunteer at the ASPCA, but that's just because I love animals.
Right.
Well, I think that's actually a really integral part of one's Christian vocation,
right?
But have we even helped people to see how those things might be connected?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's helping people to see how those things are connected is kind of what, looking back, is kind of what pushed me into maybe expanding my ministry.
Yeah, right.
maybe looking at it.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it, actually.
To me, it felt like more of an expansion or kind of making myself feel more whole. in integrating kind of what I was doing on the left hand with what I was doing doing on the right.
Right.
So that's how I personally came to it, and seeing I felt that the church can bring some things to policy decisions into the policy world that just can't be done on the governmental level.
Yeah.
We have some unique we have space, we have talent, we have some very just minor things that are very helpful, but of course we have the motivation, we have, you know, the spiritual and the theological motivation that keeps people engaged in the issue, but we got to get them engaged and kind of expand their thinking about it's not just these four walls that is church and ministry and the kind of what you're saying, because I do this on Sunday, I'm okay.
right
but, you know, helping people make the connection between the two. And I always feel like you know, this great freedom that I've been given, you know, I want to also expand that and share that to other people. So that's kind of how it influenced my thinking of policy. And I hope to impart that, or, you know, hope people are transformed by that through God's word and sacrament.
Yeah.
To kind of want to give what they've been given. to other folks.
Right. Yeah. Well, talk about, Lamar, your internship is a Horizon site. Mm-hmm. Talk about that program, how you got interested in that program, and how you see kind of developing this integration on your internship in the coming year.
Sure. The Horizon Domestic Program is a one-year internship program that focuses on sites that are multicultural or often in a urban context. And there's also another part of the program that is also rural, I should add. But I was more interested in the multicultural kind of urban context, because I think that's the future context that the church faces. So that was very important for me to want to get that experience. So that's why I applied for the Horizon program. I was fortunate enough to be placed at a congregation called Redeemer Lutheran in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I was really attracted to the church because of the work that they are doing in the community. The context of the community is extremely diverse. I would say it's about 50-50 Caucasian and African American, and there's some other groups there as well. But what I think what they're doing and what they're holding up is kind of doing ministry in kind of a broader context. They've what they've kind of done, they kind of see themselves, they see their church as part of the community, that their church membership is membership in the community.
That's nice.
Which I thought was very interesting. So it kind of all starts there. And what they've done is, as a community, as a church, they've taken on being the leaders, being the beacon of hope on their block. And they've done that by creating opportunities for young adults to come into housing that they've purchased and to actually be leaders in that community by starting coffee shops. And they have a bike repair program that kind of interacts with the community. So everything's very, the church is involved, young adults are involved. It's folks from diverse backgrounds. And I just want to be a part of that and see how that works. Because I think that's kind of the context that we're going to face.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like such a simple idea, but I have to tell you, I mean, I haven't really thought about it before. This idea that being a member in a church in a specific location means being a member in that community, what that would really look like.
Right.
Because I think so many people, when they, you know, quote unquote church shop,
right,
they're not at all interested in where the church is in a community. I mean, especially people who are mobile, they can drive wherever they want, and so they look for the what's in the walls, right?
Right.
When they think about that church, choosing a church,
right,
and not even considering sort of, well, what's the role of that church in the community? And I think to actually say no, intentionally as a church, we want to think about our the membership as something that's outwardly directed. That's really
really
important, I think.
Yeah, and it took time, from what I understand, to make that transition and right. thinking. And I think that's probably the critical
yeah,
part.
Yeah,
the critical
right, part. Right. So. And the intentionality that takes,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
But it all gets back to, and this is a way to, I think, kind of bring our interview to a close, is this sense of what is the larger relationship between the church and the world? And we can think about that very broadly, denominationally, but then also at any individual congregation. And I think one of the great gifts of your ministry, your understanding, the lens that you bring to the public vocation of ministry is the sense in which, yeah, the church is in the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe not of the world, but it is in the world, and the call is to be in the world. And so how can we, especially those of us who have a role in public ministry, help orient Christians that way,
mm-hmm,
so that that's how they understand who they are as Christians, not just the few things maybe that they do within the walls, right?
Right.
So that's exciting.
It's very exciting.
Well, listen, thank you again. This was Lamar Bailey with us today on Seminary Explores, and we wish you all the best as you go out on internship and look forward to hearing all that you've learned when you come back next year.
Thank you so much. I'm going to miss you too.
Great having you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.